A production of SDPB, South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
To run the committee this morning, ordinarily this is scheduled to be a two-hour session, but we're, because of kind of accelerating the whole day's schedule, we're going to shorten it up to an hour. And what that means is that we'll probably, in fact, I can be very sure that we will get to only the first two bills on the agenda. And Senate Bill 42, I'm going to limit the proponent testimony to 15 minutes, limit the opponent testimony to 15 minutes, and that'll give us about 10 minutes for committee discussion and action. And then the other bill, we will hopefully be able to get all the way through, but if not, if there's any who are from out of town that want to testify, I want to be sure to get that testimony in so that we can stay within our time frame. With that, I would ask the Secretary to call the roll, please.
Senator Adelstein?
Here.
Senator Howey?
Here.
Senator Gerstead?
Here.
Senator Maher?
Here.
Senator Merchant?
Here.
Senator Nelson?
Here.
Senator Peterson?
Here.
Senator Frisley?
Here.
Senator Hansen?
Here.
Unanimous.
We have a quorum. If I could ask for a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting. Moved by Senator Frisley.
Second.
Seconded by Senator Merchant. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. A couple introductions very quickly. This is the last day that we'll have an opportunity to introduce our pages. And we have Shelby Freeman from Britton High School, my old hometown, and Maggie Bull, who is running an errand, which is what pagers are supposed to do. Also, I have with me a 4-H shadow. This is 4-H Shadow Day, and that's Janae Hansen, not a relative, but I would accept her as a relative if she wanted to be part of my family. And I see we have Senator Merchant.
Yes, thank you very much. I have with me this morning a young man from my hometown, David Leiferman. He's also shadowing me today. He's with the 4-H program, so welcome him, please.
Thank you. And of course, the usual admonition, and we'll kind of dispense with that quickly. If anybody has a cell phone, well, you know that we prefer that they not go off. And those of you who are testifying, it's important that you sign the sign-up sheet at the door, mainly so that we can be sure to get your name printed right in the minutes of the meeting. We'll now open testimony on the public hearing for Senate Bill 42, which is an act to impose a sales tax on the gross receipts derived from renting mini storage units, self-storage units, or storage space, and the use of the tax on the and the use tax on the use of mini storage units, self-storage units, or storage space, and to declare an emergency. Would the first proponent please? I see you're already to the microphone, and I'm sure, as being a seasoned veteran, you know to be sure to punch the button so that you have a green light. Otherwise, those folks out on the internet have a real tough time hearing what you're saying.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Andy Fergal with the Department of Revenue and Regulation, and with me this morning is Jan Taley. I'm going to go through my presentation quickly and then hand it over to Jan. Senate Bill 42 is an agency bill that's brought to you by the department to impose the sales tax on the gross receipts derived from renting mini storage units and self-storage units, and the use tax on the use of the mini storage units and self-storage units. This is something that the department has been taxing since 1995. For well over 35 years, we've been collecting this tax, and it does fund the general budget. The reason we are here today, though, to present this bill to you is because of an opinion of the Supreme Court this December in the matter of the sales tax liability of James Permankin and Patricia Carlson. In the Permankin case, the Supreme Court held in a 3-2 decision that self-service storage facilities were not subject to sales tax because the taxpayers merely provided space and that the rental space was not a service. Though the department greatly respects the work of the Supreme Court, we respectfully disagree with the majority's decision in this case. The position of the department is that which is outlined by Chief Justice Gilbertson in that same case, his dissent. Chief Justice Gilbertson wrote a dissent in that case, and he was joined by Justice Sabers. Chief Justice Gilbertson said that self-storage units do provide a service by making available for lease space that is suitable for storage. However, we are left with the Supreme Court's decision and therefore the need for the bill. If you look at the bill, you'll see that Section 1 is an abrogation of the Permankin decision. And this is important because by abrogating the decision in the Permankin case, we would emphasize that the legislature has listed certain types of businesses or transaction or industries that are subject to sales tax as services, and that those business transactions or industries by definition are services. In South Dakota, we utilize the standard industrial classification manual greatly in taxation. The legislature some years ago passed SDCL 10-45-5.2, and that is an enumeration of businesses or industries or transactions that are specifically subject to tax by the legislature and by Chapter 1045. You should all have a handout there in front of you that shows that statute. If you look at that, you'll see that within that statute and highlighted about the fifth or sixth line down, it says that specifically subject to the tax of the chapter is Division E, except group numbers 483, 494, and 495. The Standard Industrial Classification Manual is divided into divisions, and then those are broken down into major industry groups, and within the major industry groups are industry numbers. Within Division E is the category that you could see on the third page of your handout, which is a copy of a page out of the Standard Industrial Classification Manual. And there listed is general warehousing and storage. And you will see that one of the industries that is listed as an example of that, which is general warehousing and storage, is warehousing self-storage. The general rule in South Dakota is that all services are subject to tax unless specifically exempt. By listing warehousing self-storage within 5.2, the legislature specifically subjected warehousing self-storage to tax. Nowhere in the code is warehousing, mini storage, self-storage exempt. Therefore, we feel that Section 1 of the bill, which is an abrogation of the holding in the Permankin case, is important to emphasize that where the legislature has specifically listed an industry as subject to tax, that it then shall by definition be a service and subject to the sales tax. Section 2 of the bill specifically imposes the sales tax upon the gross receipts of any person engaging in the business of renting mini storage units and self-storage units. And Section 3 imposes the use tax upon the privilege of using mini storage units and self-storage units. What these two sections do is take the taxation of mini storage and self-storage out of 5.2 and specifically list them separately as subject to taxation so that there can be no misunderstanding that those will be subject to the sales or use tax. And then Section 4 contains an emergency clause whereby the act would be in full force and effect upon the passage and approval as opposed to July 1st of 2009. This is important because because of the Supreme Court's decision, we are unable to continue to collect the tax. Part of this year's general budget, the monies we take in, were assumed that we would take these monies on sales tax in, and it's also assumed that we would continue to take them in for this year's budget. So we need to maintain the status quo and to continue to tax this, because otherwise we're looking at additional budget deficit. I'm going to turn it over now to Jan Talley, who can explain what those numbers are.
Thank you and welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jan Talley, South Dakota Department of Revenue and Regulation. As my colleague Andy Fergal said, Senate Bill 42 is an act to impose sales and use tax on mini warehousing and self-storage units. This bill is needed to replace $1 million in sales tax. That's approximately the amount that we collect on mini storage today. We're, as Andy said, we're not able to collect that now because of that unfavorable Supreme Court decision. A little bit of history about the mini warehousing self-storage issue. We have collected the sales tax on this since 1995. That was during the tax broadening in 1995. The guiding principle behind South Dakota sales tax is every person engaged in a business is subject to tax unless there's a specific exemption. We did not feel, and I don't think the legislature felt, that there was a specific exemption for the mini warehousing. In 95, when we did the tax broadening, at that time, farm product warehousing, which is grain storage, and refrigerated warehousing were exempt from sales tax. The legislature removed the exemption on refrigerated warehousing, but left the farm product warehousing in place. And specifically in SDCL 1045-12.1, the legislature exempts farm product warehousing. We feel because they did not exempt mini storage, mini warehousing, and only intended to exempt the farm product warehousing, we at that point begin to collect tax on mini storage units. Opponents of this bill will tell you that you can't tax it because it's a rental of real property. I urge you to resist those arguments. Today in the sales tax statutes, an example of a somewhat rental of real property that we specifically tax is the rental of parking spaces. So that is specifically subject to sales tax today. Everyone in the room, I'm sure, listened to the governor's budget address yesterday. It included spending cuts, program elimination, and loss of jobs. Passage of this bill is necessary to enhance the revenue collections. And again, the passage of this bill includes $1 million in sales tax. And I strongly urge you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, both of you. You have done an excellent job of staying within your 15 minutes. You actually have about 1 minute left. Is there anyone else who would like to speak as a proponent of Senate Bill 42? Any other speaking as a proponent to Senate Bill 42? If not, we will move to opponent testimony. We will hold questions until after both proponents and opponents have testified, and then we'll open for questions from the committee. Do we have an opponent to Senate Bill 42, please?
Good morning. I'm not a seasoned veteran.
That's all right. We'll try to do everything we can to...
I'm a friend of Jim Permunchen's.
Welcome, and please feel free to tell us what we need to know.
Okay. What do I push? I don't push anything.
Do you have a green light on the button there on your microphone? You are being live on the Internet, and all can hear.
I am going to try to present his contentions. He had copious notes. He is out of town right now, and he was unable to attend. But... during the course of the first trial, and he conducted his own trial, the state itself said that what he did was the rental of real estate. When they asked the gentleman from the state to define what he did It took him about, he said, about 10 minutes. I'm sure it probably wasn't that long. But the judge ordered him to explain what he did. And the gentleman from the state said he rented real estate. And that's his contention, that that's all they do is rent real estate, in this sense, in many storage units, okay? Warehousing is totally different, and I'm sure you gentlemen are aware of that. I just looked it up myself. I'm trying to piece this together myself, so bear with me. The definition of warehousing is a performance or administrative and physical function associated with the storage of goods and materials. These functions include receipt of an identification, inspection, verification, and putting away a retrieval of this merchandise or whatever it is for the issue of the merchandise. There's bailment involved. That is warehousing. Okay, and there are warehouses in the state, and but storage units should not come under that. All it is simply the rent. What his question was to the state, and let me go back real quick. He started 3 years ago in this process, and all he wanted the state to do was tell him why he paid taxes on a piece of real estate that was simply like the rest of his real estate. He did the same things. He met a person at the site. He had them sign a contract. They rented it for a legal purpose, and he collected money. They even put their own lock on the storage unit. There was no service involved. The state argued in their appeal that it come under the Service Act. There's no service involved in what he does. He has other rental units also. He rents houses. He puts more service into those than he does into the storage units. And his argument is, if you're going to tax real estate, you have to tax it all. Okay? Am I making sense at all? Am I making any sense with anybody? I'm going to, and he wrote, what the court ruled, and I have, do you gentlemen have copies of the court rulings?
I don't believe copies have been circulated. I'd like to just give them to the page and she can pass them out.
But 44 states in these United States, the IRS, common sense, says that that's all he does in that instance is rent real estate on that particular building, okay? What the state does, what the Taxation Revenue Department does, is just pick and choose because they say so that if this is taxable. In the process of him getting answers from the state, it took a year to get some kind of definition out of them. And one of the definitions from the attorney of the state, and this is in the transcript of the trial, is that what he did was the rental of real estate for the purpose of storing something in it. It does not even have to have anything stored in it for the tax to be due. So it's simply just the rental of that real estate. So there was no service provided. His contention is when the legislature imposed the taxes in 1965. They did not intend to tax real estate. And even in this Bill 42, the state is saying, going back to 1987, that the legislature intended to subject the general warehousing and storage industry with a tax, and nobody disagrees with that. Warehousing is subject to a tax because there's a lot of service involved there. This rental of this storage unit is rental of real estate, period. And even in the new law, they say mini storage units, self-storage units, or storage space. And their other definition of storage space is any storage space in any building, anywhere in the state of South Dakota. How do you differentiate between storage space? Apartment buildings have storage facilities on them, okay? They have storage lockers, a lot of them. Farms have buildings that things can be stored in and rented out. Houses have store. Malls have storage buildings in the back of stores, okay? They can store things in. What he's saying is you need to pass a clear and direct law, and if you're going to tax real estate, tax real estate. You leave it up to the state and the Taxation Revenue Department just to pick and choose what they want. The definition, again, I'll go back to the definition that the attorney for the state wrote him after they said it was the rental of real estate. In the trial, he said it was what he did was, yes, the rental of real estate, but for taxation purposes, it was considered a service. There's no service involved in what he does. So that means they just said, because we say so, it's taxable. And believe me, no one knows better than Jim or anybody else in this matter what the problem is here, what the crisis is, okay? And it's not his intention to put a burden on the state or anybody else, but you need to pass a law that's clear. Why do you leave it up to the Taxation Revenue Department just to do what they want to do? That's what he's saying. That's his contention, that it's not clear and defined enough. And that's, if I made any sense, I hope I did, but would it be possible for me to put him on a cell phone as another speaker?
No, I think that you have probably been able to sufficiently. I've had conversations with Jim and yeah. I think that you're telling the story. Okay. You know, you're laying the groundwork and.
In that folder I gave you, there is a statement he dictated to someone that knows nothing about this, and he emailed it to me, and you have it there. And it just briefly, it's kind of like I say, the person that did this didn't know anything about what was going on, but I think you can put his tale together. It's too ambiguous, and you're again leaving it too ambiguous. And can I make a personal observation? I'm not an attorney, and you'll have to correct me if my assumptions are wrong. When I read this Bill 42, it kind of brought me back to a civics class when I was in high school, and the ex post facto law. We all know that is, you can't pass a law describing a crime and then making it retroactive and applying it to a person. But what it seems to me up here, what the state is trying to do is just in the reverse. Because the court ruled, and three honest judges in your state who didn't bow to the pressure of the crisis at hand, which is your shortfall of revenue, made a decision based on the rule of law, not on the crisis or an emergency or anything like that. They based it on the rule of law. And what they're trying to do is to get you to overturn that, okay, based on this current present crisis. The intention of the legislature, whose crystal ball did they use to get the intention of the legislature back then? And if it was their intent back in 1987, why did they wait till 1995 to impose the tax? Does that make sense at all? But again, back to ex post facto, it looks to me like they're trying to pass a law, have you pass a law to just the reverse, to decriminalize an illegal act that they did by taxing real estate, which the court said they did, and then applying it retroactively to get themselves out of the bind they put themselves in. It took him a year to get somebody to define this for him. They would not put it on writing. And to him, that said, there's something wrong here. And if you have a sense of right and wrong, and you think you're right, and you use the system, which he did, he went to the courts. The courts upheld his right and wrongness, okay? Now they're trying to get you to overturn that. And because of the crisis, if we abrogate the rule of law because of a crisis, which this national government has done for the last 8 years, we're in a lot of trouble, because the rule of law is what holds this thread together of this society. and I'm getting a little upset, but I thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, and you have a few minutes left, and I see that there's one other person that would like to testify, and I'd remind you that you know, we're running under this time constraint, and but if you have something additional to add, why please step forward and do so. Do we have further testimony in opposition to Senate Bill 42? Seeing none, would the proponents like to have just a minute to indicate some rebuttal? And again, I would caution you to like about a minute.
Jan Talley, Department of Revenue and Regulation. Again, when we tax mini storage, we looked at the tax statutes to determine how to tax mini storage. We just don't pick and choose who we're going to tax. We felt that mini storage was a service. It fell under the taxing statutes. The only warehousing type of thing that was exempt was farm product warehousing, and that's why it was a decision of the department to tax it back in 95. And again, this bill is necessary to enhance our revenue.
Okay.
Andy Fergal with the department. I would just emphasize that it is the legislature's power to impose tax, and by definition, we believe that the legislature imposed this tax pursuant to 1045-5.2. And the decision of the Supreme Court in this matter was not a unanimous decision. It was a 3-2 decision with a strong dissent written by Chief Justice Gilbertson. But I think the main thing to remember here is that we are in a crisis. This is revenue that we've continually collected for over 10 years. The taxpayers that run these types of businesses are licensed. They've been collecting the tax, and they've been remitting it to the state. As far as I am aware, Mr. Permunchen was the only individual that had complained to the department about this specific tax. I think for the most part, the people that own these types of businesses have been collecting the tax and remitting it. If you look at the bill, too, you'll see that Section 1, 2, 3, or Section 2 and 3 require that a person be in the business of renting mini storage and self-storage units. So if you're not in the business of, you would not be subject to taxation, and all the exemptions that are in the code would continue to apply.
Okay, thank you. We'll close public testimony and now open to questions from members of the committee. Senator Merchant.
In Section 2, Line 6, the excise tax imposed on the privilege of using the mini storage units, imposed on the people that are, you know, renting the service of the storage, that goes into the gross receipts, correct? And then within that, the 4% is paid. I want to clarify that. And then in line one of the 4% of the gross receipts, so the excise tax is gathered, and then the gross receipts tax would be paid.
Please.
Mr. Chairman. Jan Talley, Department of Revenue and Regulation. The bill addresses the sales and use tax on mini storage. Use tax is imposed when sales tax is not applied. So it would be imposed in the same manner if, for example, you had a business and that was in the business of renting mini storage, but we did not have them licensed, and you were providing the services of mini storage, the use tax would apply.
Further questions, Senator Gerstead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Jan, Andy. I'm wondering how many people have objected to the tax on what seems to me to be a business and quite a profitable one.
Mr. Chairman. Jan Talley again. As Andy testified, Mr. Permankin was the only one that really contested the tax. Most of these businesses have come forward, are licensed, and are remitting the tax on the mini storage.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we pass this bill, I just wonder how far the Revenue Department is going to go. We know that there's been quite a consolidation of farms, and there are machine sheds that sit vacant on some farms. And often when you rent that farm, the owner will give you use of that machine shed. Are we going to try to collect a sales tax and attribute a certain part of the rent to the use of that machine shed?
Please.
Mr. Chairman, Jan Talley again. If that particular farmer was not in the business of renting mini storage, if they rented the farm and along with it came a shop or a garage, I don't think we would license that person for sales tax.
Senator Hawley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a very quick question. I know we're short on time, but I'm curious, aside from parking space rental, is there any other class of, is there any other real estate that pays sales tax? If someone's paying real estate taxes, can you give me just a quick list of what other kinds of property would pay a sales tax if they also pay a real estate tax?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Jan Talley again. The one I could think of in particular was the renting of parking spaces. I can't think of, most of the time when you rent real estate, when you rent an apartment, there's an exemption in the law for a rental that's longer than 28 days. So if you're renting a house or renting an apartment, that would be exempt from sales tax. The parking space one is the one I can think of that most closely fits with the mini storage. And Andy reminded me, too, we have other warehousing things that we tax, like public warehousing.
Any further questions? I guess I would have one question. There seems to always, in all sales tax issues, there's a question of who is it that's paying the tax. And, you know, I guess if you could answer for that, you know, who is actually paying the tax? Is it the person who's renting the unit, or is it the person who owns the unit?
Mr. Chairman, when a business obtains a sales tax license, the retailer is responsible for collecting the sales tax and remitting it to the state. But, of course, the consumer, the one renting the mini storage, would be the one that's paying the sales tax to the retailer. The retailer holds it in trust and then is required to remit it to the state.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? If not, we'll close public testimony and open to committee action or comments. Senator Adelstein.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I'd like to make let the record show that my company is in this business in a rather large way in Rapid City of Pennington County, but that will not reflect on my vote, my personal interest.
Thank you. Yes, let's see. Senator Gerstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment, I guess, as I'm trying to get my arms around this. It seems to me like this is a business that's being run, and it's, I think, a pretty profitable one, as I've been told, and that it should be subject to taxes like any other business, and that perhaps some of the Supreme Court got caught up in trying to interpret and define words within the law, which is their job. And so some of them interpreted it one way and some another. But it seems to me like this is a business, and maybe I'm mistaken in that, and I surely would take education from anybody else on the committee.
Senator Hawley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move that we defer this to the 41st day.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second? Seconded by, moved by Senator Howey, seconded by Senator Maher. Any discussion on the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, aside from the rental of parking spaces, I'm not familiar with any other class of property that pays real estate taxes that is also subject to a sales tax. And rental storage units is not a service. It is the rental of real estate. And so I would just hope that I don't always agree with the Supreme Court. Probably none of the rest of us do all the time either. But this is a case where they reviewed this and they made the right decision. This is the rental of real estate, which should not be subject to sales tax. So thank you.
Senator Merchant.
Thank you. I was wondering if in RV parks, those are divided in sections for people to, you know, either use a cabin or park their RV, and is that subject to sales tax?
I believe the answer to that is yes.
I think that that would be a very similar situation.
Further comments? Further comments to the motion, which is to defer this to the 41st day, and for the benefit of those of you out on the internet, that basically means that it would kill the bill. And if there are no further comments, I would ask the secretary to call the roll. Those in favor of the 41st day motion, vote yes. Those opposed, vote no. And please call the roll.
Senator Alstein.
No.
Senator Howey.
Yes.
Chair Stead?
No.
Maher?
Aye.
Merchant?
No.
Nelson?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Frisley?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Three yes. Six no.
Here we have a 5-3 vote to defeat the motion. The bill is still before you for action.
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Frisley.
Move to pass.
We have a motion to pass by Senator Frisley. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Merchant. Any speaking to the motion? If not, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no, and the secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Howey?
No.
Chair Stead?
Aye.
Maher?
No.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Frisley?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
7-2.
Here, the motion is carried on a 7-2 vote, we'll go to the floor. And let's see, I'll carry this to the floor. And Senator Gerstad, if you would explain it in your caucus, please. We will now move to the next bill on the agenda, which is Senate Bill 44, and that is an act to repeal certain sales and use tax exemptions concerning the sale of feed for certain animals and the sale of certain animals, and to repeal the classification of fur-bearing animals. And I would ask for the first proponent to this bill. And we have 20 minutes. And I would especially like to be able to take testimony from any who are from out of town, and in the event that we are unable to bring this bill to a conclusion this morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jane Page, Department of Revenue and Regulation. I'd first like to start out by saying we do have an amendment. If you'd like it passed out right now.
If, please. And what I would allow you to do is you can explain the bill, and you can also explain the amendment. We won't move the amendment until we're in the committee discussion stage. That way, in the event if there's any other amendments, we can discuss them all at the same time. But please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm speaking on behalf of Senate Bill 44 today. The department prepared four bills this year that are repeal of exemptions. This is one of those bills. This bill will repeal the exemption for the sale of live ostrich, emus, and rheas, and we expect the revenue to be about $15,000. It also repeals the exemption for feed for ostriches, emus, rheas, and domesticated fur-bearing animals. That would be about $5,000. It repeals the exemption for ostrich, emus, rheas, and domesticated fur-bearing animals for breeding or production stock. That's about $5,000. It repeals the exemption for the sale of live non-domestic animals, such as elk and deer, for breeding and raising purposes, and the feed for them, and that's estimated at about $25,000. It also repeals the statute that allows the raising of domesticated fur-bearing animals to be considered an agricultural pursuit. And what that repeal will do will result in the taxing of fuel to raise these animals. We have a statute that says if it's an agricultural pursuit, the fuel is exempt from tax, and it's fuel like LPG, natural gas, diesel, kerosene, things like that. And we expect that to raise about $1,000. Now, keep in mind, if they sell these animals as a sale for resale, the live animals as a sale for resale, to someone who has a valid resale certificate, it is still exempt from tax. The amendment that's before you today is for Section 11. What we did when we repealed this specific statute, and this is the one for the statute that no longer considers them an agricultural pursuit, we inadvertently took out the last paragraph where the Secretary of Revenue now has all the functions to regulate the breeding and raising of domesticatedly fur-bearing animals. We didn't mean to do that. It gave it back to the Game Fish and Parks. To repeal that exemption still leaves it with the Department of Agriculture. So that's all that amendment does. The total amount of revenue is $61,000. That's not a lot of money. But with the four bills that we are proposing this year to repeal exemptions, it comes to a little over $5 million, and that's a lot of money. And even though the $61,000 is not a lot of money, it may make a big difference to someone who may lose their Medicare this year because that's being cut, or their social service or health benefits. So this $61,000 to you might seem like a little bit of money, but it might seem like a lot of money to those who are having their services cut this year. So I'm asking you not to look narrowly at this, but to look at the big picture and the entire state and what's best for all of the citizens of South Dakota. And this year, more than ever before, every single dollar counts. You're asked to make some very tough decisions this year. And are you willing to make them? And are you also willing to ask the people who will be affected by this bill to help and sacrifice to make some of these budget cuts a little more palpable to people and to gain some more money for this state? I'm urging you to pass Senate Bill 44. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further proponents to Senate Bill 44? Further proponents? I think I see an opponent coming, and I don't see any other proponents, so you may rise to your feet and make your way again this way. Am I suspecting correctly?
Yes, you are.
Please have a chair and make yourself comfortable and tell us what we need to know, why this bill is not a good bill.
Okay, my name is Alan Rao. I have an elk ranch, and I farm up at Java. And first of all, I don't understand how they want to take us out of this where it specifically said cattle, buffalo, sheep, goats, swine, pheasants, partridge, quail, and poultry, along with us, are exempt from feed taxes when we are livestock like the rest, and now they decide to take out two or three species. I don't know where their revenue figures come from. I went back and checked in my tax records for the past 2 years. I've got an average of 150 elk on my ranch. I have bought zero in feed. I raised my own. So there's no tax there. I sold one animal that would have been taxed. She was worth $500. So that's all they would have collected off of me. I actually butchered between 30 and 40 head. That was sold as meat, so it was already taxed. So I'm not sure where these figures are coming from. This would be a nightmare to implement because most of us have cattle or buffalo or something else on the side. So when we go to a feed store and buy our feeds products, now these guys have to divide out how much goes to your cattle, how much goes to your elk, how much goes to this. Also, if I buy hay or grain from a neighbor, does he now need to have a sales tax license so he can sell me feed? If I've got cattle and elk and I raise my own feed but I'm short some, how do I decide which feed goes to my cattle, which feed goes to my elk, what do I tax? It's going to be a very difficult thing to try to enforce. As far as the tax on emus and ostrich, as far as I've been able to tell, there are no birds of those species left in the state. I went to the Animal Industry Board a couple of days ago, and they know of none. So I don't know where they're getting $5,000 income off of them. I'm just thinking Department of Revenue has this quite inflated, and they're not going to get the taxes they think they're getting. And if they do, it's going to be difficult to collect. Our animals are sold all private treaty. There's no place we can take them to a sales barn. So I sell to a neighbor. Now, does he have to have a sales tax license because I sold him an elk? Who collects? Who pays these taxes? Who enforces it? If I sell an elk to another elk breeder, who's to ever tell the Revenue Service that elk was sold? If I decide not to pay it, who's going to follow it up? Somewhere there's got to be record keeping. It's going to cost us more to implement this than we're ever going to collect. I guess that's about all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. It's a pleasure to hear from you. And do we have further proponents? Please. Good morning. Speak right into the mic, please.
Good morning. Pardon, I've lost my voice a couple days ago.
You need to speak a little closer there.
Thank you, Chairman and Committee, for hearing me get a chance to speak. My name is Walt Brown. I'm a mink farmer from Arlington, South Dakota. We have a mink farm in Brookings County. And I'm opposed to this Senate Bill 44. My main reason is I believe it's an unjust tax. Our farm was started in 1938 by my father and my uncle. And now I've taken over the business, and I have two grown sons that are in the business. The reason I feel it's an unfair tax, I think we really need to look at the big picture. A, it looks to be that we're taking domesticated fur-bearing animals away from agriculture. I understand now it was put back in, or if I understand right. I had a little trouble hearing there if that was left in, if we would be left in the Department of Ag or not. I think that's correct. If we are, why would one group be targeted? That would be my question. Where is this coming from? Mink are considered a domestic animal. They're considered part of the ag cultural industry. And then I guess I'd further say, if this tax is just, and I'm assuming if we bring a tax forward to be looked at, we would want it to be a just tax. And if this is just, why would the cattlemen, why would they be exempt from their feed? How am I different from cattlemen, hog producers, or anything else? If we look at feed from a livestock raising perspective, pardon me, we look at feed, I guess I would look at it as raw materials that we would use to make our finished ag product. And if that's so, and if this is a just tax, why wouldn't we even be looking at raw materials going into a manufacturing plant? Over in Brookings, we have a lot of plants that I don't believe pay sales tax on. Their materials are going in. Basically, we're using raw materials, and we are manufacturing something. We manufacture an ag product, mink coats, mink fur is what we do. A little bit ago, I just heard the Department of Revenue said, I believe they stated that it would be $5,000 from the sale of from the tax raised from the sale of feed. And I'm not sure where any of these figures are coming from. I know they haven't been consulted. This would be a big burden for me. Our feed bill alone is over $500,000, just that alone. So if it's 4%, we'd be over $20,000 just ourselves. And, you know, that definitely would be a burden, and I agree with the Department of Revenue. We need to look at the big picture. I think I'm looking at it from a little different perspective than they are as far as the big picture. But all that aside, I guess really the core, the heart of this thing to me is I believe it's an unfair tax. If you want to tax the feed on all livestock thing, so be it. Let's debate that. But why would we pull out? I don't understand why someone would take out us. I know we're a small group, but I wouldn't think anybody would want to be doing that just because lack of opposition. And I guess that's really all I had to say. I apologize for my voice.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Thank you for being here.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask him some questions while he's up?
Well, what I would like to do is there an answer? Yes, but is there anyone else from out of town that would like to testify on this bill? It's pretty evident that we're not going to get completely finished, but I want to be able to, if you've made the trip to Pierre to offer testimony, I want to be sure that you get a chance to make your comments, and I would like to then save about the last 5 minutes or so or more, if possible, people on the committee would have questions of especially those from out of town. Is there anyone else from out of town that would like to testify, please? And I would remind you to kind of be mindful of, if you've got something new to offer, rather don't repeat something that's already been said.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Kenny Weiss. I'm an elk rancher up in the northeast corner by Melbank, and Roger Carber and I was instrumental in the laws that were put in place in 92 and 93, and this tax was part of that law in 92 and 93. It's been a very good working bill from the time on, and Game Fish and Parks has had no problems with us, and it's just been a very good workable situation, and I would seriously recommend that you guys leave a working system as it is. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I guess I would ask, is there anyone else who would maybe not necessarily have anything else to contribute but would like to at least be shown on the record as being either in opposition to this bill? If you'd see a hand or something. Your name, sir? Okay. Lane Kamak. And who's the other one? Roger Carver from Clark. Okay, good. Thank you. Now, questions from the committee for any of those who have given testimony?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Howey?
Yes, I have a question for the Department of Revenue, please. And my question is, when you were looking at this, what distinction did you determine that caused you to think that they should be subject to a tax and the others not? For instance, what is the distinction that you use between an ostrich and a quail or a pheasant and an elk and a buffalo or a sheep or a cow? I don't understand what you use to make this determination.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Howey, we were just asked to look at certain bills that look at certain statutes to find some money for the state. We looked at these, and they looked like special interest groups to us, especially the ostrich and the emu. We knew that there wasn't much left in the state, and should that still be left on the books? And we heard testimony today that we've overinflated the figures and then testimony that we underinflated the figures. We used as low of figures as we could to look at some bills and decide, or some statutes and decide, does this really need to stay there? Is there some money here at all that we could collect for the state? We weren't targeting any specific industries. We were just looking at what we could collect for the state. We know that agriculture with livestock and poultry and that is a huge industry, and those affect a lot more people, and these affected less people.
Follow up, Senator Howey, and then Senator Maher.
So,
and Senator Adelson.
My understanding then is that you chose these because you view them as special interest groups. That's, I think, what I heard you say.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, that's basically it.
Senator Maher?
Could you elaborate on our first gentleman who testified about how does that work with feed transfers? Let's say I grow my own feed. Do I have to pay a use tax on that feed that I grew then?
No, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman. you have no gross receipts then. You grow your own feed. It's your own feed.
Senator Alstein?
In as much as you said we should bite the bullet and raise every dollar we can for the state, would the department like for us to remove all exemptions for feed rather than just selecting a few? Raise a lot more money, I suppose.
Mr. Chairman, that would be your decision.
Senator Gerstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Page. Is the wild game feed taxed?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to look at that. I can't think of what wild game is right now. Are you talking about other than deer or elk? What
you know, when people go out to hunt, they use feed to attract the game. And my understanding is that that feed is not being taxed. And I was just wondering.
Mr. Chairman, that feed would be taxed if you're... The only exemptions we have in the statute if you are a farmer regularly engaged in the business for feed.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if it falls to me, but I think I can kind of respond to that. I believe that it's illegal to offer feed as a bait, so there would be a lot more difficulties than just the... Well, in the again, you know, we have the benefit of these who have come from out of town to share some things with us. Does anyone have any questions for any of them? Senator Adelstein, did you?
I was just going to ask, what about domestic raising of pheasants, which are in a sense wild game? Are those exempt or pheasants?
Mr. Chairman, the feed for them is exempt. They a couple of years ago, I believe the legislature put in a statute that they are an agricultural pursuit.
Senator Howey?
Just a point of clarification. So then you don't view those raising pheasants as a special interest group. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, not at this time. Not at this time, Senator Howey.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for, I believe...
Senator Maher?
I have a question for Mr. Brown, I believe is his name. Is that correct? Mr. Chairman, my question for you, Mr. Brown, is how many mink farms are in the state of South Dakota within your industry?
To best of my knowledge, there's only two.
Okay.
The USDA, their National Agriculture shows three. I'm only aware of one other one.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman,
yes,
follow up.
Sure.
What do you feed a mink?
Mink are carnivores.
Okay.
So we feed cheese out of our two state cheese plants, like Norton and Big Stone. We bring in hamburger out of a packing plant in Nebraska. It's pretty much all meat-based items. We do feed some cereal grains.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Well, I apologize a little bit for having to kind of abbreviate this morning's session. And at our next meeting, I believe that we have few enough bills that we will be able to bring this up again on Monday. And we will accept any further testimony, if there is further testimony that is to be offered, and then hopefully take action on the bill at that time. If there is nothing further, I would welcome a motion to adjourn. We could, but I think that, you know, that would be, again, we want to be, you have caucus at 11, everyone has caucus at, there was no indication of anyone else that that wanted to give, out-of-town people that want to testify. We have several that, you know, that can return again on Monday to testify. Senator Gerstead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With all due respect, I think our caucus meeting is probably a little less important than our committee. If you should feel, sir, that it's a good time to make a decision now, I mean, totally up to you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have people here that have traveled great distance, and I hate to have them come back next week. I see this bill as really starting down a slippery slope. This is agriculture. Where are you going to go next? Are you going to start taxing the guy that's feeding buffalo? Are you going to start taxing cattle feed? These things are taxed when we sell the product. I see no need for us to delay the process. Unless you want to, I would like to make the motion to defer this to the 41st day.
Second. Is there, before I receive that, is there any other people who would like to testify in opposition to the bill that have anything additional to offer? If not, we will go ahead and close to public testimony, and we will open to committee discussion and or action. And we do, I will recognize your motion to defer to the 41st days by Senator Peterson, seconded by Senator Gerstad. Any further speaking to the motion? Senator Gerstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, some of my thoughts. I know what the Department of Revenue has to do, and they have to try to find additional dollars, and I respect them for that. I don't think that this is a really appropriate place to find those dollars. There aren't very many. You know, with all due respect, I think, the governor has asked us, too, to do what we can. But I think there are very few dollars here for the state, but the businesses that are involved would really be substantially hurt. And I don't think we want to penalize any of our very important businesses that are doing a good job to raise, I think, healthy food for us in the state. So I would hate to see them penalized by this tax when everybody else doesn't have to pay one. Thank you.
Further comments? Further comments? If not, those in favor of the motion to send the bill to the 41st day, which effectively would kill it, vote yes. Those who vote opposed, vote no. And the secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Yes.
Howie?
Yes.
Gerstad?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Frisley?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Motion to send it to the 41st day prevails at a 9-0 vote, and now I will accept a motion to adjourn. Moved by Howie, seconded by Senator Frisley. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.